D. Mace Finnegan and Donick 102.5 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are indeed presented by Bax Homeworks. Remodeling done right. Get your free estimate at baxhomeworks.com. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. Of course, a battle of winless teams this weekend in Houston. The 0-3 Texans, a surprise, versus the 0-3 Titans, not so much a surprise. Two of the six remaining winless teams in the NFL, two of the other teams will also match up this week on Monday between the Jets and the Dolphins as part of, a Monday Night Football doubleheader. By the way, speaking of those Giants, so all of you, of course, you live here in Nashville or in surrounding areas, so you might have a little tunnel vision, right? You're focused on how bad things are going here because the Titans are the team you care about. But it's also going poorly in other places too. So let me tell you how poorly it's going, for example, in New York with the 0-3 Giants. By the way, Jackson Dart going to make his first career start this weekend for the Giants, replacing Russell Wilson. Here's a story from NJ.com about 16-year-old Joshua Reynolds, who was going to be part of the pregame festivities at MetLife Stadium this past week when he happened to see Giants co-owner John Mara walk toward him. The story says, this was Reynolds' opportunity to make his big point to his favorite team's chief decision maker. Quote, I nicely asked him to fire Shane Bowen. Shane Bowen, now the Giants' defensive coordinator, previously
name from the past.
With the Tennessee
Blast
Titans.
From the past.
Reynolds said, Mara kind of glared at me, so I don't think he's listening. Which influenced this young man to launch a GoFundMe to pay for an airplane protest banner that will fly over MetLife Stadium before Sunday's home game against the Chargers. The banner will read, Mr. Mara, enough is enough, clean house. So,
see if that kid gets invited anywhere.
Exactly. Nope, he's not.
But hey, I'm just telling you.
Right, people go nuts. Yeah. Like, I'm sure it's just as crazy in Miami that they weren't supposed to be 0-3. Derek picked them to win the division.
Exactly.
But he also did pick the Colts to win the division.
Yeah, they're 3-0.
One texter says, I think Houston starts with an H, Adam. Yes, it does.
No.
But I swallow my H's.
Yes.
Blame my parents who were born in Brooklyn and Queens.
Right. East Coast.
It's a very New York way of saying
Houston.
It.
Houston. Take it up with Paul Kaharsky. Right. I think he does the same thing.
I'm flashing back. It's my basketball coach at Vanderbilt, Eddie Folger, also a New Yorker. For 4 years, my 4 years of college were the same years of Tennessee shooting guard and longtime NBA player Allen Houston, as Eddie Folger would say. Who's got Houston?
I don't know who got Houston.
We're like, who's Houston? Are you talking about Allen Houston? And, of course, his dad was the coach, Wade Houston.
So I'm sorry, Texter. This is going to happen twice a year. The Titans are playing the Houston Texans. It doesn't sound natural for me to say Houston. I don't like the way that feels.
Though it's maybe correct.
It's a strain for you.
It's
a
definitely
strain.
Correct, but yes. You know, hey.
It doesn't have a great mouthfeel. Houston. I don't like that. Houston sounds better.
There you go.
So for the purpose of this program, it's Y-O-U-S-T-O-N. The Houston Texans. So take that. But I'm wondering what the conversations are like in Houston/Houston right now, because the Texans are surprisingly 0-3 of the 0-3 teams left in the NFL. They are the one that had high expectations entering the season. Again, the other ones, the Titans, we know that. The Giants, bleh. The Saints, bleh. The Jets, bleh. The Dolphins, yeah, you know, maybe. But the Texans were expected to challenge and, by many accounts, win the AFC South. And the problem for the Texans, comparing and contrasting what's going on between the Texans and the Titans, is that the Texans' defense has played quite well. They are the second team since 2000, according to Mike Sando of The Athletic, to start 0-3 without allowing more than 20 points in any game. They lost 14-9 to the Rams, 20-19 to Tampa Bay, and 17-10 to Jacksonville. So the Texans have been in all of these games. The defense is holding up its end of the bargain. It's the offense that's struggling mightily, particularly, hey, the offensive line. Their offensive line is having a rough go of it. So it's an interesting matchup because the Titans are supposed to be bad, and all of their statistics tell you they are bad. The Texans should be better. Sandell points out they are third in EPA on special teams, 17th in EPA per play on defense, 30th on offense. So the Texans are doing quite a bit right, but their offense is lagging behind.
Yeah, for whatever reason, this offense hasn't been able to get jump-started. And it seemed like these problems started to happen, a year ago. And they have not been able to get, their quarterback back to his rookie form. Now, he's had injuries. One of your wide receivers go down for a considerable amount of time. Then another one you bring in last year in Diggs, he didn't play the season for you because he got hurt in the fourth game, and it seemed like y'all had a good rapport. Then they trade your left tackle in the midst of all of this. I think they traded him before the season, but you trade your left tackle to an offensive line with an offensive line that wasn't good even when he was there, but he was your bright spot, but you traded him away. So now you've made your quarterback's job a lot harder. You changed the OC on them, and you changed the offensive line. And now these receivers that they have, I like Nico, but you expect these two rookie receivers to all of a sudden make up the slack for lost production, whether it be through injury or guys not there. And these two guys out of Iowa State, they may be good, but are they ready to take that step to make the Houston Texans offense what it was 2 years ago? I don't think they're ready for that, and it shows. They haven't been able to score. So, I mean, they are – the only reason they are not in the same position the Titans are in is because they have depth to their roster. They have good players. They have a quarterback that's shown he can play. But make no mistake, they have the same problems that the Titans have, the offensive line.
By the way, Willie, according to the NFL, the Texans have had just 4 red zone drives in 2025 and are yet to score a touchdown on a red zone drive. They joined the 2011 Jaguars as the only teams in the past 20 seasons to have 0 red zone touchdowns through their first 3 games of the season.
Titans at least have, what, 2-1, 2-3?
Hey, it's something the Titans have done better than the Texans.
Exactly.
Who would have thought?
It's crazy. The Texans have been in the games. Like, they had the lead late in that Monday night game. I think it was Monday night, against the Buccaneers. Mm-hmm. And they were one stop away from winning. A great 2-minute drive by the Bucs won that game. But they did leave a lot of points on the table, particularly in that game. I didn't watch the other 2 games, but it is astounding where it does seem like, you tell me, I don't know what people who are a little closer to it are seeing, but just the overall play of C.J. Stroud, but from afar, from the 10,000-foot view, it's everything revolves around the poor play of the offensive line. And, of course, they lost Joe Mixon. I mean, Nick Chubb still is kicking, I guess. I saw him. He had a nice touchdown run against the Bucs in the game I was seeing. But Stroud seems to be above the criticism. Is that true?
Because of
what... They're not putting it on him.
Because of what's happened. It's sort of like he's in the same situation that Cam Ward's in, but a few years further along as far as maturity and knowing the NFL. He's in the same – he doesn't have an offensive line. And the Titans' offensive line, because of injury now, it's not playing well. And that's what he's dealing with. He doesn't have an offensive line that's playing well. So along with possibly the play calling. So you saw one guy give up play calling. Well, they already changed their OC. Has that OC given up play calling too? I don't think he has.
I don't think he has.
Yeah, so.
He just got there.
Yeah,
right?
He just got there. That's what I mean. And they're still struggling as an offense.
One thing that the Texans do well is get after the quarterback. Will Anderson, I have to imagine, with J.C. Latham not practicing again, I think it's safe to say we could probably rule out J.C. Latham for Sunday. Do you think Will Anderson right now is just sitting at home, rubbing his hands together, licking his chops, looking at a picture of John Ojukwu right now? Because Will Anderson might have a field day against this Tennessee offensive line as it is currently constituted. Cam Ward has taken 15 sacks in three games.
And they've got Danielle Hunter as well. Mm-hmm. Like, he's also a great – I mean, their pass rush is really good. This is going to be trouble. This is trouble.
By the way
– with it looking like there's a very good chance that Latham won't play again.
This is going to be trouble.
Cam Ward's 15 sacks in his first three career starts. David Carr and Kyler Murray are the only two other number one overall picks in the common draft era to take more sacks in their first three career starts. Anytime I hear the name David Carr in the same sentence or paragraph or even on the same page as Cam Ward, I freak out a little bit.
Teron asked Cam Ward, I think it was after the game last Sunday, about David Carr and Josh Freeman. And I'm thinking, do you think Cam Ward knows who either one of those guys are? But I mean, like, the context of Teron's question, he understood what he was asking.
Yes.
He's like, hey, you know, quarterbacks have really struggled when they are constantly under pressure. So I think he put two and two together. But specifically, do you think his mind was going back? I don't remember.
Cam Ward was born 1 month after David Carr was drafted.
Oh, wow. Yes.
So that might answer your question. But anytime I see Cam Ward in the same area on a page as David Carr, it's talking about all of the sacks, and we know how much physical punishment David Carr took early in his career and how that ultimately affected his career. Not saying that Cam Ward's going to turn into David Carr, but it's not a good name to be associated with when it comes to keeping your quarterback upright.
Well, I think a lot of people would tell you that he got shell-shocked, he got into bad habits, and that is exactly what Dan Orlovsky, in a great interview, our best interview of the week, he specifically was talking about the mechanics of Cam Ward. He's got to keep them intact. He's got to stay in good habits. And he went to the next level and said they've got to make sure he continues to develop under center and they don't get, as he called it, shotgun happy, something like that. Too crazy. They're running a huge percentage of their plays from the shotgun. And you can develop bad habits that it becomes harder and harder to get out of it, even when maybe, hopefully, the personnel gets better around you.
But isn't that what that offense does? Shotgun? Because the same offense that Cincinnati runs, they're always in the shotgun. Matthew Stafford's just about in the shotgun every time.
But those teams, well, I, the Bengals have had trouble protecting Joe Burrow. There's no question. That might be the biggest problem.
And maybe standing shotgun helps him see what's coming at him.
But they're not protecting him. What Orlovsky was arguing is if you could play more multiple tight ends. Mm-hmm. They have played the
but they can still
one
get
back,
multiple
one
tight
end set 80-something percent of the time, more than any other team in the league by far. And on those plays, their EPA is the worst in the league. So a little more versatility, maybe more multiple tight ends, which might allow you to do a little more play action.
I like it because of the play action. Turning your back to the defense. The defense not knowing the true play action, not this,
read option RPO.
Stuff and trying to play action. So I think being underneath center sometimes that may help Cam, but they can also add double tights and still run shotgun. Regular plays, but I would like to see him underneath center more because I think that puts the defense at a disadvantage when you play action.
You know what Orlovsky said that caught my attention? I didn't know exactly what he was saying, but he sounded a little, derogatory when he said, he goes, this isn't 2019. He was talking about a lot of shotgun, a lot of RPO.
Joe Burrow
is
doing a lot of that.
And so he was saying you've got to get out of that. You've got to diversify some, especially when you don't have the ability to protect your quarterback. They have gotten into so many second and longs and third and longs, and the numbers are super ugly. Cam Ward's QBR is 19 point something. It's just brutal. Part of that is a byproduct of just being in obvious passing situations mm-hmm. with no pass protection.
Their average yardage on third down is 3rd and 9 through three mm-hmm. games. Whew. 3rd and 9.
That's tough for a good offense, an offense that's got pieces to do well in. But think about it with the personnel they have.
You don't have the personnel to spend the bulk of your third downs in 3rd and longs. Have y'all noticed, and I've noticed this about Cam, and it's not like it's a default or anything. I think because we're talking about play action and being underneath center, and maybe this does help. This is one of the reasons why it seems like when he play actions, everything tend to open, you know, as far as the defense crashing down and everything and him coming out and finding that guy. Have y'all noticed how slow he comes out when he's handing the ball to the running back? It's the weirdest thing. I've never noticed that with any other quarterback. And it's almost like every handoff is a fake. That's the way it seems to me. Every handoff to me seems like he's about to boot it. So why not put him underneath center more? Because if I'm looking at it, every time I see that motion, I'm thinking he's handing the ball off every time. Because it's unusual because I've never seen a quarterback sort of comes out of his underneath center, and he comes out of it slow. It may be fast, but to me it looks slow. But you don't know. But in my mind, I'm thinking he's about to hand the ball off. Why not do more of that? Because it seems like when you do that and he has to turn his back to that end, it seems like he's able to get outside the pocket and make a play. That's just me.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We will take your thoughts on the upcoming matchup between the winless Texans and the winless Titans. I'll also ask you the question I asked at the top of the show. When you consider everything that's happened with the Tennessee Titans, the fact that they're 0-3, the fact that Amy Adams Strunk and Burke Nihil were on the field at halftime honoring Mike Keith and were being what, Willie?
Lustily booed.
Lustily booed. Duh. That is correct. Lustily booed. The fact that this game is in Houston on Sunday. The fact that Jeffrey Simmons said after the win in Houston last year that there were tears in Amy Adams Strunk's eyes after that win. When you consider all of those factors, could a loss on Sunday trigger a reaction from Amy Adams Strunk? 615-737-1025. We'll get all to it next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. A reminder that you can check us out tomorrow at Jimmy Kelly Steakhouse in Midtown from 3 to 6. Well, Willie won't be there. He'll be up at Denison for Parents Weekend to visit Mahoney. But guess what that means? I get to eat a steak. I'm going to say make 3 steaks. I'll eat Willie's.
And I get to have all of
the desserts.
What is it? The dessert. Ooh. The lemon. Was it lemon?
It was a lemon pie of some kind.
Oh, it's so good.
The creme brulee.
Oh, it was so good.
If you guys could just picture this.
Yeah, I'm not jealous at all, guys.
Yes. First class. Yes.
Let's make David a little bit more jealous for a moment. If you can just picture this, you know, we've got our setup there, and the servers there, the excellent servers at Jimmy Kelly's, they're just bringing us plate after plate after plate, steak and charcuterie and dessert and all this.
Asparagus.
I hope y'all stubbed your toes.
Oh, man, it was so good.
That's rude.
It is very rude. But I understand, because I would be thinking the same thing about
it. But with Willie, Willie will be on the show, but he'll be absent from Jimmy Kelly's, which means more room on the table for food. So that's what I'm looking forward to. Yeah. I'll miss you, Willie, but I also like food.
Well, I'll miss you guys and the Jimmy Kelly's spread. It is first class.
So you can catch us there tomorrow from 3 to 6, I should say. Here's something, speaking of the Texans, that caught my attention. So you may have noticed earlier this week that the Texans released C.J. Gardner-Johnson. The Texans traded for Gardner-Johnson from Philadelphia in March. And for whatever reason, discontent behind the scenes, the Texans released C.J. Gardner-Johnson. And D'Amico Ryans was asked about this on Wednesday, and this was his quote, "It was my decision to move on. I know what's best for my team. Coming from me, the head coach, it was the best for our team. That's why I made the decision. And I thought to myself, I wish Brian Callahan could have said something like that the other day.
That tells
media relations.
Yeah. One guy was like, listen, this is my decision. I'm making it. It's for the betterment of our team. And one guy said something totally different. In a different tone, let's say that. But it was different. One was more direct and firm, and the other was more smooth it out. Let's smooth it out. The other one was like your dad, like just coming in the room like, listen, you ain't doing your homework the way you you ain't doing your homework. The teacher said you missed some homework. All right. And then the other one was like, son, I heard that the teacher said you weren't doing your homework. Don't you think you need to do your homework? Which one you think gonna get done? In which situation you think that homework gonna get done?
But this is a really interesting chapter in the D'Amico Ryans and Houston Texans era that they're in, because the message was, it's unacceptable just to win 10 games and get to the playoffs. We got to go to the next level. And now it's like 10 wins is looking pretty good. Winning the division might look pretty good where they sit right now. Like, this is adversity they have not faced in a while, and this is a game that they are supposed to win, should win, if they are who they think they are. So what I do remember, like, I'll give you an extreme example. The 2008 Titans went 10-0, and then 13-3 were the number one seed in the AFC, lost to D-Mace's Ravens, came out the next year and went 0-6. But after 3 weeks, it was still like, hey, you know, we've been pretty good the last 2 years. We're still this good, right? And the next thing you know, they were 0-6, and they worked their way back to go 8-8, but it was too late. So it's crunch time early for the Texans here.
You know that old sitcom trope where the dad finds the son or daughter smoking a cigarette, and the dad says, you like cigarettes? You're going to smoke a whole carton of cigarettes. I imagine Derek Mason doing that.
Yes, that's why I didn't smoke cigarettes when I was little. I was scared my mom and dad were going to make me smoke the whole pack, and I wasn't willing
smoke
to
smoke the whole carton, son.
You damn right I would tell him, you want to smoke cigarettes? Okay. All right. Let's see if you like this. Hey, I'm an old school parent, man.
Josh from White House on our text line answering my question about Amy Adams Strunk and Houston. He says, well, she could just fire Nick Holtz. That would feed her need to fire someone. It won't hurt the team, and the fans won't be mad at her. It's a win, win, win.
But he's not the offensive coordinator. So why are you firing him? Did he get demoted?
I mean, technically,
hold on. Did he get demoted?
He's got the same role. He's got the same role.
Which is nothing.
Well, whatever he was doing before, he's still doing. According to Brian Callahan, his role is exactly the same.
Help putting together the game plan during the week, but then
along
not
with seven
plays.
Other guys, there's a third down guy, there's a screen guy, there's a red zone guy,
that's typical
Let me ask you this question, Derek: how many coaches are in your experience, how many coaches are typically involved in the offensive game plan on a week?
I think it's like what they explained.
So the Titans situation is not abnormal?
It's not abnormal where you have, like, you know, the coordinator and you got the offensive line coach and then the running back coach, tight ends. We got to all tie it in together because everything has to look the same. So the tight ends coach, the tight ends coach, offensive line coach, those guys got to work in a tandem. They got to put together whatever package. And obviously the running backs coach come in. And it just depends on, you know, how the sort of the structure of the coaches run, how much input they allow, because I don't think that's out of the norm where you have your offensive linemen.
Well, it is truly the definition of coordinating. All I can think of is the boomerang David Allen Greer's
coordinate.
Dad. You got to coordinate. So he's coordinating the inside of the jacket,
exactly,
with the belt, the shirt, and the socks,
the shoes.
That's what Holtz does. He coordinates.
But he don't get the call.
He just doesn't call the play.
Yeah. On the day of the game, no, you did enough coordinating. Now it's not for him to call the plays. Which, I mean, I can't wait to see how this looks. Excuse me for stumbling over my words. I can't wait to see how this thing looks Sunday with a new play caller. I don't think the plays would be different, but I just want to see, one, are they going to be underneath center more? Will they use Cam Ward a lot on the move? Will they do hurry up more? Will we see a change in not the offense, but the philosophy, how they approach each game and each play? The plays are going to be the same, but how does he call them? Is he going to be ahead of plays, or is he going to suffer from what Callahan suffered from, not being decisive with certain things? You know, we'll see. But I look at it as a good thing, at least for this game, because I would almost bet just about anything that this offense will be productive this game. I'm not talking about next game. I'm not talking about after Houston. I'm saying don't be surprised if this offense is productive this game.
Why? The new coach bump.
Yes, the new coach calling plays. They were used to – Houston was scouting Brian Callahan in the way he called plays. What was his tendencies? Third down, this and that. They got to go back 2 years or maybe longer than that, 3 years.
2023.
Yeah, to get a bead on how Hardigree calls plays. So to me, I think you get a bump because of that. And I think this offense is going to look a little bit different for this game. Now, moving forward, I don't know. Teams adjust. They figure it out. But I think in this game, it's an advantage for the Titans.
Wes in Clarksville says, I see the Titans and Texans having a tie. Oh, God,
oh,
no.
Snaps. No, oh, never. No. Never. Don't let the game end on a tie. If you got to go to 8 overtimes, please do it.
Would that bring a tear to Amy's eye, a tie?
One, not both.
Would Jeffrey Simmons say, she was overcome by emotion because we didn't lose. We just tied.
I don't want to see a tie from the Titans.
Oh, God.
I don't want to see a tie. You need to – it would be
– and that tie would affect the draft positioning and the Titans would not have the number one overall pick.
Don't even wish for a tie, man. Come on now.
Don't do it.
No.
Don't do it. One texter says, would love for you guys to address this today. Tuesday, you talked about focusing on offense. So, Derek, you said on Tuesday that as the Titans rebuild the team – they should be almost exclusively focused on rebuilding the offense and just fill in the defense as needed. This texter says, I understand your point on drafting offensive weapons, but we have, in all quotes, all caps, I should say, to address the pass rush. There are 48 NFL players who have more sacks than our entire team. That's interesting. And it shows. So this texter understands what you were saying on Tuesday, but perhaps wants you to elaborate on why you're not focusing as much on the defense.
Because in today's football, you got to score points, man. You do. And I understand, and I know fully well that defenses win championships. But you're not in championship mode right now. I can see if you're in championship mode and it's okay, let's build up that defense. Let's go. But you're not in championship mode right now. What helps this young quarterback is you get him people he can throw the ball to that he can count on, guys that can grow with him. You drafted Gunnar Helm. That's a guy that can grow with him. You drafted Alec Eilmatter. Hopefully that's a guy that can grow with him. DK, it may take him a bit to sort of develop into, but I think he's going to always kind of be a gadget guy. He's going to be great at special teams, and hopefully he turns into like this Percy Harvin type of guy where you can use him in different ways. May not be as explosive as Percy was, but you can use him as far as those dynamics. But beside those two guys, you don't have those three. You don't have anybody this quarterback can grow with. Stack your offense. I'm not saying don't get a defensive player, but your first round pick to me, if there's a wide receiver worthy of a top five pick, take him. You need him. Because if he's worthy of that top five pick, like consensus, I'm not talking about somebody over here and then somebody over there. Oh, he's a late riser. No, I'm talking about a bona fide like Harrison was a few years ago, or Chase was. Top five picks, no matter what, or Neighbors. You need that guy on your team. You can't live without that guy. Your quarterback can't be the best quarterback he can be without having that type of guy. So I'm not saying like totally go away from the defense. Yeah, if there's a defensive player there in the second round, get him. But if you're picking top five and there's a wide receiver worthy, not somebody you got to, oh, he's really a 10, but we're going to take him. And no, you did that once already with Corey Davis. Don't do it again. I'm talking about a bona fide top five pick. You take him because your quarterback needs it.
Fair enough.
But if there's a defensive player there in the second round, take him. Take that defensive end. Take him.
Get my advice, get a lot of picks.
Or
like the Pulitzer Prize guy. I'm going to keep
referencing. We don't allow those people on this show, okay?
Say he's coming on the show. I'm going to refer to his study that says when you trade down and get more picks, that's how you build your
but
roster.
But that's where
the Ravens are great,
notorious
for
that. Yeah. But that's where potentially the trades come in and play at the middle of the season. More notably, Jeffrey Simmons. Mm. Because I think it was, I think I heard it earlier today on our station while I was watching television, one of the two, is that say if you trade Jeffrey Simmons, who's not getting sacks in the NFL? Who else is not getting sacks in the NFL? Who else is not, off the defensive line isn't good? Dallas?
Yeah.
Say if Dallas is still in that mode of when they're still right there. That's a place you can get one of their late first-round picks. You can get one of their first-round picks for Jeffrey Simmons. Now, that's a situation like we talked about a month ago where it's not if you trade him, it's when you trade him and who you trade him to. Because if I trade him, if Dallas is still in playoff contention, and I know there are a lot of people out there laughing.
And they've got a little ways
laughing,
to go.
Yeah. But if Dallas was in a position to make the playoffs or the Baltimore Ravens or the Buffalo Bills, which Baltimore and Buffalo we feel will be, and they need that guy in the middle. Well, trade. Give me your 24th or 25th or 26th pick in the draft. Give it to me. I give you Jeffrey Simmons and maybe give me something else. But I really want that pick in the late first round. Why? Because if I can get a wide receiver or a rush end in the top five, I can double back and then get my offensive or my defensive player also in the first round.
I would love to see them create two or three teams that would have an interest.
Uh-huh.
And I'm very curious because right now, would we agree, there has been no talk of, hey, Jeffrey Simmons could be available. Like,
you're right for
at
me,
some
so.
Point,
it.
At some point, these things start coming out. The Adam Schefters, sometimes the team wants that out, right? Hey, start putting it out there. Hey, Jeffrey Simmons is available if you have the right offer. I'm waiting for that report from Schefter or somebody like him, Ian Rappaport, you know, whoever, to take it to another level. I would think that should come up, especially if they don't win the next two or three games, which they're not likely to.
615-737-1025 will take your thoughts on all things Tennessee Titans, who travel to Houston to take on the Texans this Sunday. But coming up next as we wrap up the show, oh boy, L'Jarius Sneed. He said something, and the Titans tried to clean it up today, and it doesn't matter because the message was already sent to Nico Collins. And we'll do that coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5 The Game.
Good question, but it definitely wasn't an egging on. One of the things that we always talk about is the nameless face of the opponent. Obviously, I respect Nico, and so does he, and so does everyone in our room, but it's not about that. It's about us. You know, and I think that's what he was trying to articulate, and that's what he meant. It's about what we're doing, how we're doing it. We treat everyone over there with the utmost respect. This NFL is full of phenomenal receivers. Each team we play every week, every day, you know, everyone has a superstar. So I think it was more of that. I know it was more of that than it was egging on because he had total respect for him.
What have you seen from him?
That was Titans cornerbacks coach Tony Oden today after practice. And if you're wondering what Tony Oden is talking about,
What fire he was putting out.
So L'Jarius Sneed the other day was asked about matching up against Nico Collins. And his response was, who? Twice. And look, Tony Oden tried to walk it back and said, hey, something about nameless, faceless opponents.
This is what he meant.
Yes. It doesn't matter because Nico Collins has already felt disrespected. Nico Collins said, and I quote, he knows who I am. That's crazy, end quote. He also said, I'm a dog. You know what I'm saying? I'm just me. I don't say much. I just play. You can talk all you want. I'm not hearing it. Just line that ish up. Nico Collins, 100-yard game incoming against L'Jarius Sneed on Sunday. Like, I guess I appreciate the Titans' attempt to clean it up, but it doesn't matter what he apparently meant. Nico Collins took it personally, to quote Michael Jordan in The Last Dance, and now he's pissed.
I don't – why? Were you trying to be funny, L'Jarius Sneed? I don't know. I mean, listen, just back it up, man. If you want to, you know, disrespect your opponent like that and, you know, make it seem like you don't know who the cat is, we all know you do, just like he know who you are. You know, at one point you were all pro cornerback. You just hadn't played that way in the last year and a half. Just back it up, man. That's all I got to say. When you go out, I don't want to see what happened last week or the week before that. None of that. Since he's nameless, he shall – if he's nameless now, then he shall remain nameless during the game. If I hear his name called, big play, touchdown, you didn't do your damn job, which means if I hear his name too much in a positive way, you shouldn't say another word again all season. You know, I think L'Jarius is a good player. He's gone through some it just hadn't been his season the last year and a half for him. But if you're going to talk like that, man, just back it up. Because what we all have seen, not just me, what we all have seen is that you haven't played the way that the city of Nashville thought you would play when the Titans signed you as a big free agent, big ticket free agent. It's not me that is saying this. It's everybody that is saying it. As I understand, you were hurt last year, part of it. But this year, you hadn't played well. So if you're going to have that type of bravado and, you know, I understand it's gamesmanship. I get it. But back it up. That's all I say. Back it up.
By the way, Nico Collins, 14 receptions for 181 yards and 2 touchdowns this season for the Texans.
Just back it up.
L'Jarius Sneed.
And that's on an offense that has not done much.
Correct. L'Jarius Sneed has allowed 7 receptions on 15 targets as the nearest defender and 1 touchdown, 124 yards as well. A passer rating allowed of 97.6.
Just back it up. That's so,
it's on.
It's on. It up. One texter says, how many unsportsmanlike penalties are coming between the two? I don't think there'll be any. But would not shock me if Nico Collins burns L'Jarius Sneed for a touchdown on Sunday as the floodgates open for the Houston Texans.
Hey, right. Adam.
Yes?
You seemed a little perturbed.
Yeah. It's a little distraught.
Right before we got back on air.
It has been a few days
since
I've insulted Bill Belichick on the air, and it has come to my attention that he is on the cover of Us Weekly with his girlfriend, Jordan Hudson. How many was it? What are they? 1-2? 1-3? What's their record? Doesn't matter.
1-2, 1-3. Yeah.
Doesn't matter. How many bad college football coaches get on the cover of Us Weekly?
Exactly.
Let me read to you.
The important thing is that the relationship is still going strong.
Yeah, still going strong.
Okay, so let me describe this cover. Let me describe this cover for you. He's sitting down wearing his NFL 100 burgundy jacket. She is standing behind him, hands on his shoulders. It appears she's wearing one of his Super Bowl rings. There's an arrow pointing to Jordan Hudson that says Bill Belichick's 24-year-old girlfriend.
It's cringeworthy,
man. In case you didn't know.
It's cringeworthy.
Was she at least a teenager when he won that?
No, I mean, she probably was. I don't know. It's cringeworthy to me, man. Yeah, depending on what Super Bowl it was.
That was my question. Like, which one?
You know, there's a pair of what Willie described earlier on this cover as well. But the subhead is, oh my God, opportunist, muse, or deeply misunderstood. Friends and insiders talk to us about how the former cheerleader captured the 73-year-old coaching legend's heart and became the most talked about woman in sports. Who is the real Jordan Hudson?
I'm sure.
Bill Belichick, your legacy is just like dwindling.
Tarnished.
As you go. Listen, you'll always be considered a great football mind and coach. But if you're thinking about getting back in the NFL, you can forget about it, man. It's done. It's a wrap, man. And you're not winning at North Carolina either.
He let this happen?
Yeah, he did, man.
He went to the photo shoot?
Yes.
And he was like, okay, yeah.
So I've seen this picture before, so I don't think this was a exclusive photo shoot. Looks like they probably took something from Getty Images and put it on there. I've seen this picture before. My favorite part is the little arrow in yellow that says Bill Belichick's 24-year-old girlfriend, in case you were wondering.
Does it have...
There could be some lustily boobs.
Oh, boy.
Well,
that was a misspeak, by the way. That was taken out of context.
I'm not denying that's on the cover.
Slip of the tongue. And I was not referring to this picture.
Yes, he wasn't. That was, what, over an hour ago. Yes.
Oh, man.
So funny soundbite.
Oh, man. All right.
I mean, but that was just, somebody decided they wanted to really, like, get on your nerve today. So they put out that post.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I haven't gotten angry about Bill Belichick.
Yeah.
Irrationally.
Are you
angry.
Really angry? Or are you just like, is it funny to you? Like, you are amused by this,
it's
being
funny.
A Duke guy.
It's funny because North Carolina is not performing well.
Exactly.
So it makes it even funnier.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I don't subscribe to Us Weekly, but if you do, look in your mailboxes for this for this magazine. Let's get to this text to wrap up the show. And we talked about tomes the other day. This is a tome. And by the way, if you don't know what the definition of tome is, it is a book, especially a large, heavy, scholarly one.
Didn't we tell people to stop sending those?
Apparently, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. Saeed did not get the memo.
Oh, Saeed didn't get the memo.
All
okay.
Right. Hold on.
Take a deep breath. We got about 4 minutes here.
Why on earth do you bring up talk about trading Jeffrey Simmons? That's insane. We do this every couple of years. You started the chatter about A.J. Brown. It happened. Then Kevin Byard. Derrick Henry, which eventually happened. Then the sports media acts surprised and becomes critical of those moves. The sports media chatter is reckless. I believe they influenced the stupid moves by the Titans. Great organizations don't trade away your best players. Jeffrey Simmons is our entire defense and the best player on this team. Why generate a useless conversation? The Titans could quit screwing up the draft and free agency. They might have a decent roster. Giving away Jeffrey Simmons just puts you deeper into the hole, and the Titans seemingly don't know how to bargain. So as with A.J. Brown, Jarvis Brownlee, Derrick Henry, and Kevin Byard, they got nothing in return from Saeed.
Hold on. Can the hole get deeper? I didn't know the hole could get deeper.
Dig up, stupid.
I thought the hole was deep already. I didn't think it could get any deeper. But what's the name? Saeed. I understand what you're saying. The Titans are in a different category right now. They are in a category of teams with little to no, like, premier players. They're in that ballpark.
Willie, how many top 100 players as voted by NFL.com do the Tennessee Titans have?
Zero.
One.
Nope.
No, zero, because Jeffrey wasn't in there. And it's not just the 100 players. They have no one under the age of 28 on that list. No one. So we're talking about young guys. There are a bunch of young guys on this list, by the way. The Titans have none of those guys. That's why, to me, and I'm only speaking for me, trading Jeffrey Simmons in the middle of the season, if your season lends that, if you're 1-8, 0-8, I mean 0-9, 2-7, then your season is telling you you need to make some changes to try to get better the next following season. And the only person you have to trade is Jeff that'll get you a first-round pick.
And you've got Sweat hurt
exactly.
for a while. You've got Latham hurt, and we don't know when he's coming back. It does not look good. So you have to be looking further down the road. And I keep coming back to the same question. Which players do you have that are going to be on the next really good Titans team?
And I want Jeffrey on the next really good Titans team.
But it's just not realistic. Yeah, their roster is not going to allow them to do that.
That'll do it for us today. The Predators Gold Star Showcase is coming up. Puck drop at 6:30 right here on 102.5 The Game. We will talk to you tomorrow live from Jimmy Kelly Steakhouse at 3 o'clock.
Be loved. Love all your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful day. I love you. The team loves you. You hear that music. Don't forget about us because we'll be back tomorrow, Same three voices, same three faces. Peace.